the class crustacea within the phylum Arthropoda. The class crustacea include organisms that we commonly call the crustaceans. Probably the best known of the crustaceans are things like shrimp, crawfish, crab, lobster, those types of organisms. Okay. The crustaceans are different from the other arthropods in a couple of different ways. In one case, they do have similar characteristics to the other arthropods in that they do have two body segments. They still have the cephalothorax and abdomen, which is similar to the arachnids. Okay, so two main body segments, also similar to the horseshoe crabs. But if you look at the antennae there, they actually have two pair of antennae. And so this is a unique characteristic of the crustaceans, is that they have two pair of antennae. In addition to having two pair of antennae, they also have a characteristic that is called biramus appendages. And what biramus means, if you look at the leg here, can't see it real well in this picture. I'll show you some other pictures where you can see it better. What you see is you see the leg actually splitting at the bottom or breaking in two like that. So that's a biramus appendage. So all of their appendages will actually look like that. Okay. A third characteristic that makes the crustaceans different from other arthropods is they have nathal mouth parts. I'm not going to get into real specifics of mouth parts because they are quite complicated, but suffice it to say they have movable mouth parts. I don't know how many of you have ever messed around with a live crab before, but you can see those nathal mouth parts moving on the live crab really easily. Okay. So two pairs of antennae, nathal mouth parts, biramus appendages. Those characteristics are fairly distinguishing of the class crustaceans, okay? As you can see here in this lobster. Sometimes they will have appendages that are chelate, however these appendages are not technically pedipalpi, as we saw, for example, in the scorpions and pseudoscorpions. Okay? The first order within the class crustacean we want to talk about is the order Branchiopoda. The order Branchiopoda are sometimes called the fairy shrimp, or brine shrimp is another organism that belongs to the Branchiopoda. Okay. The water fleas. These are fairly microscopic organisms. Another common organism that belongs to this order you might have heard of before. Have any of you heard of sea monkeys before? They belong to this group. This is a fairy shrimp here. Another common name for it is a sea monkey. These organisms have the ability to lay eggs, and then the eggs can actually dry out to some extent. You can have them in a dry environment. And then they can stay kind of dormant for long periods of time. And once water is again introduced into the environment, then they'll hatch, complete their life cycle in a very short period of time, then lay more eggs, and then over a dry period of time, those eggs may be there. And you find these organisms all over the place. We have them in freshwater environments around here. We also have a specific type of fairy shrimp called the brine shrimp that's found in the Great Salt Lake. Okay. Now, kind of interesting with the brine shrimp in the Great Salt Lake. Many of you have heard about fishing a brine shrimp. Many of you heard of that before. There's actually things in the fishing regulations about it. You actually don't fish the shrimp, you fish the eggs, is what they're looking for. When they lay their eggs, they'll go and scoop the eggs up off the surface of the Great Salt Lake, and then they'll store them and put them in cans. And they can be stored for quite some period of time, and what they do with them is they sell them to fish hatcheries, and then the fish hatcheries will take and open up the can, put these eggs in the water, and they hatch very quickly once they hit the water, and then that's a good food source for the fish. Does that make sense? So that's one of the main things they use them for. Probably the strangest place that I've ever seen a fairy shrimp. My kids and I were down in Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument hiking a few years ago. And we were going to do Coyote Gulch, and many of you have ever been down there. We're going to go down crack in the wall and get down into the Escalante River. And that night it rained probably as bad as I've ever had it rain on me down in Grand Staircase. And we got down to go into the canyon, and and I met some people hiking up out, and they were wet up here. They're flash flooding down in the bottoms of these canyons. So I decided to walk the rim. One of the most beautiful hikes I've ever done. I've never done that before. But all over on the Red Rock, up on top of the rims, there are these little puddles of water in the Red Rock. You've probably all seen those if you've been down in southern Utah after a rainstorm. Well, anyways, we were sitting down eating lunch, and I saw things moving around in there. And so I started looking really close, and what they were is they were fairy shrimp. And I don't know how the fairy shrimp got into those places, but apparently the fairy shrimp, the eggs are in those little divots of the rock with the sand, and then when they get wet, they hatch, complete their life cycle, lay eggs, and stay there until the next time it is wet. But I don't know how they got there in the first place, but it was really interesting to see them there.
Okay. Any questions about the fairy shrimp? I mentioned that another common name for the fairy shrimp are the sea monkeys. What sea monkeys are is they actually get the fairy shrimp eggs. They sell them in a little package. You can dump them in the water and then they come to life. This shows you how bright politicians are. The Greek government outlawed sea monkeys in Greece about 2 years ago because they thought it was witchcraft. So, this is a water flea here. Water fleas also belong to this group. They are microscopic. You probably have all drank water fleas today. Even if you drink bottled water, it's basically the same water that you drink out of the tap here in Ephraim. Actually, it's a little bit less healthy for you, most bottled water, than Ephraim water. That's one of the reasons why we treat water with chlorine and other chemicals, is so you can kill organisms like the water flea. But we drink them dead in our water all the time. Any questions about the Brachiopoda? The next order within the class Crustacea is the order Malacostracea. The order Malacostracea is the largest order within the class Crustacea in terms of diversity and also numbers of individuals. And this is the order where we see most of the organisms that you're familiar with and you would consider to be crustaceans. Okay. Now this first organism that I'm showing you here, you've all seen these before, right? What do you call them? Some people call them potato bugs. Some people call them roly-polies. Some people call them pill bugs. But they are crustaceans. They're not bugs. Okay. And next time you see one of these, before you start smashing it or rolling it around or whatever, let it crawl on your hand. And you can actually see the biramus appendages. You can see it on the one leg very well there. And that you can also see the two pair of antennae. Okay, so these are very closely related to shrimp and crawfish. This is a crawfish, and again, probably the best thing about this picture is you can see the biramus appendages here, the two pair of antennae very clearly. Crawfish, and as well as some other of the crustaceans, the crabs and the shrimp, lobsters, people use them for food. And let me tell you, if you've never had a good Cajun crawfish boil, you've just never lived. Okay. I lived in Louisiana for a while, and man, there's nothing as good as sucking head and eating tail. That's what they call it. It is really good stuff. You break the tail off, you suck the fat out of the cephalothorax. And then you take the meat of the tail and pop it in your mouth. Oh, man. Or if you've never had crawfish etouffee, you just never lived, man. Crabs belong to this group. A lot of people like to eat crab. This shows two malacostracans here. You see the crab, and it's actually feeding on a shrimp. Okay. So this is shrimp. Shrimp belong to the same group. Also, can you see kind of these shovel-like structures right here around the mouth? Those are the nathal mouth parts that can kind of move in a crab. Any questions about the crustaceans? The next order Malacostracans. The next order within the class Crustacea is the order Cirripidae. The order Cirripidae are your barnacles. We're not going to talk too much about barnacles. They're found in marine environments, and The barnacles are actually a sessile filter feeding organism, and they actually help surround themselves with kind of a protective covering. And so like on this pop bottle here, you can see all of these barnacles here. Barnacles can be a serious problem for ocean-going ships. This is a picture of the live part of the barnacle, the soft part of the barnacle that's a Sessol filter feeder. And these are all barnacles here. These are the protective coverings that they've surrounded themselves with. Okay. Any questions about the crustaceans? Okay, now the next two classes that we're going to talk about, I'm going to talk about two classes together. The first is the class Diplopoda, and the second is the class Chilopoda. These two classes contain the centipedes and millipedes, okay, or the millipedes and centipedes, I should say. A lot of people confuse millipedes and centipedes, so we're going to kind of talk about them together and compare them. One characteristic, though, that separates the millipedes and centipedes from the rest of the arthropoda is millipedes and centipedes have one pair of antennae. Now, they're not the only classes to do. We still have one more class after these to talk about, the class Insectia, and they're going to have one pair of antennae as well. But if they have one pair of antennae and then they have more than three body segments, they're either a millipede or a centipede. Okay? So millipedes and centipedes have numerous body segments and one pair of antennae. All right? So the first class, Diplopoda, are the millipedes. Now, if you look at a millipede and compare it to a centipede, one of the first things that you'll realize that is different about them is their body shape. Millipedes are cylindrical, okay, which means they're round. Centipedes are dorsally ventrally flattened. What does that mean? Flat top to bottom, okay? So millipedes are round in cross section, or if you look at them, they look cylindrical. Another characteristic that the millipedes and centipedes are very different with is their antennae. If you look, you can barely see the antennae here on the millipedes. And that's because their antennae are very short and they fit into grooves in the head. Okay? Whereas centipedes, you can always see their antennae, they're relatively long. Right? Any questions? I'll show you some centipedes here in a minute. Another characteristic between the millipedes and the centipedes is the number of legs that they have. Which one has more, milla or centa? Okay, milla. Milla means what? Thousand. Centa means 100. Now that doesn't mean that they have 1,000 legs versus 100 legs, but what it means is that they have a lot of legs. Okay, and millipedes have more legs than centipedes, so therefore 1,000 is more than 100. Okay, kind of a thing. That's the way I remember it. Also, the legs of the millipedes are very, very short in relationship to the body. These organisms are fairly slow movers, and they're what we call detrivores. They feed on dead decaying organic material such as leaves. Okay. This is a close-up view of the millipede legs. Notice they're relatively short in relationship to the body size. Another characteristic of the millipedes is they have two pairs of legs per body segment. So if you look here, there's one body segment, and in that body segment, there's two pairs of legs. Okay. The centipedes are only going to have one pair of legs per body segment. Any questions about that?
Do they always have the same number of body segments? Or?
No. They have close, but no. They actually, as they mature, they get more body segments. So, any questions about the millipedes? Now, the centipedes belong to the class Chilopoda. And a lot of people, as I mentioned, confuse the two because they do have a characteristic that is similar, okay? And that is they have one pair of antennae with multiple or more than three body segments. So if we look at this centipede here, you can see that there are multiple body segments here, more than three, one pair of antennae. But again, notice the differences here. The centipede is dorsally ventrally flattened, so it's flat up top to bottom. Antennae, one pair, long and visible, right? Okay. What about numbers of legs per body segment? Or pairs of legs, I should say. There's just one pair per body segment. Notice the legs are relatively long in relationship to the body size of the centipede. Typically, this is true with most organisms. The longer an organism's legs, the faster it can move.
So these organisms are fast. And centipedes are actually predators. They prey on other arthropods mainly. Okay, so, and the way that they catch their prey is they essentially run their prey down. Right? So they're really quite quick. Another characteristic that is very different about the centipedes versus the millipedes is that in centipedes, the very first pair of legs are modified as poisonous fangs. So centipedes are poisonous, right? Whereas millipedes are not. Now the question you may be wondering is, are they poisonous enough to kill you? Any of you wonder that? Okay? The answer is, some of them are. But not the ones that we have around here. Okay?
What ones do we have more of, millipedes or centipedes around here?
Probably about the same, if you know where to look. In old log piles and stuff, you'll have a lot of millipedes. Most of the time, however, people around here see centipedes more commonly. There's probably just as many millipedes. But the centipedes around here, the venom, the toxins, are very similar to a bee sting. So if you're allergic to a bee sting, you're probably also going to be allergic to a centipede bite. There are some centipedes in the tropics that get to be almost a meter long. They're the ones that are the most deadly toxic. Generally, this is true with almost every venomous animal. The larger the animal, the more venomous they are. Okay. Yeah?
I've heard a rumor about the daddy long legs, and people say it's poisonous, but the mouth is too small for
them. Yeah. No, that's incorrect. We talked about that last time. It's false and false. Yeah, they can bite you, and they're not poisonous. Okay. The centipedes, any other questions about the centipedes? This is another centipede. Now I'm going to back up and show you the millipedes again, just to kind of compare the two. So millipedes, cylindrical in body form, short antennae that fit into grooves, short legs in relationship to the body size, two pairs of legs per body segment. Okay. So here's the antennae of the millipede, looking at the short legs, two pairs of legs per body segment of the millipede. The centipede has long antennae in relationship to their body, fairly long legs, only one pair of legs per body segment. They're dorsally, ventrally flattened. They are predatorial, their first pair of legs are modified as poisonous fangs. Okay. Just another centipede here. Any questions about the Chilopoda or the Diplopoda? Okay, the last class within the phylum Arthropoda that we're going to talk about is the class Insecta. The class Insecta, as you can probably guess, are the insects. Okay, and the insects have one characteristic in common with the Chilopoda and Diplopoda, and that is they have one pair of antennae. Right? But there's where things kind of end for the similarities between the Chilopoda, Diplopoda, and Insecta. Right? Because insects have three distinct body segments. Now, it's a little bit hard to see it on this grasshopper the way that it's positioned. But insects have a head, which you see here, a thorax, which goes from here to right behind the leg here. You can actually see where the joint is right here. You know what you're looking for. And then they have an abdomen. Okay. In addition, insects have three pairs of legs, or six total legs. So when I teach this to elementary school kids, I tell them, remember, three and three. Three body segments and three pairs of legs. Okay? And then in addition, they have one pair of antennae. Alright? Any questions about that? Many of the insects will have wings, not all of them. If they do have wings, the wings are found in the thoracic region, and there are always four total wings or two pair of wings. Okay? If they have wings. Now some insects like flies are going to have two pairs of wings, but one pair is going to be very reduced, and so you really don't see them all that much. Okay. But insects, if they have wings, have two pair of wings or four total wings. They're always found in the thorax. Alright? Any questions about that? Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about a number of orders within the class Insecta. The class Insecta is by far and away the most diverse group of arthropods. As we mentioned before, insects make up almost 50% of all animal species in the world. Okay, so their diversity, there's as many different types of insects almost as every other animal group combined. So there's a lot of different types of insects. There are a group of insects, I should mention before I get into this, I'm only going to talk about some of the major orders. There are actually quite a few, probably as many orders that we're not of insects that we're not going to talk about. But I'm going to talk about most of the orders that you guys are going to come in contact with in your life, except for we won't talk about the Blatteria, which are the cockroaches, and the Mantoidea, which are the mantids, and the Phasmidea, which are the walking sticks. And we're going to miss a few orders, okay? I'm going to talk about the major orders, however. Now, the order Thysanura is not really a major order. However, there's about six orders of insects that are wingless. They are what we would consider to be the more primitive insects from an evolutionary perspective, and they are all wingless. And out of all of those wingless orders, the order Thysanura is probably the most common and the one that you would run into. So that's kind of why I'm covering Thysanura. So the Thysanura are wingless throughout their life. They don't have any wing buds or wing pads at all. And this is a picture of some silverfish. Now there are a couple of characteristics that make the silverfish different. First of all, they have three caudal filaments. Okay. There's one other order of insect that has caudal filaments, and actually some members of that order do have three caudal filaments, but they have wings. Okay. So if they don't have wings and they have caudal filaments, they're probably silverfish. Okay. In addition, they have scales on their body, and that's what gives them the silverish appearance, is the scales on their body. Let me just show you another picture of one that's not under black light here. You can see this silverfish here. If you look at the back of it, it kind of shines like it's silvery. Can you see that? That's because of the scales. The scales are reflecting the light. The scales that they have on their body are very similar to the scales that a butterfly or a moth have on their wings. Most of you have played with butterflies or moths before and you get that little dusty stuff on your fingers. Those are the scales from the wings. Well, the Thysanura have scales on their body, and they are the only insects with scales on their body.
How big are the silverfish?
They can get to be, three quarters of an inch.
Are they around here at all?
Or? Yep. Yeah, we actually have quite a few around here. In fact, I see the exuvia of them up in the library all the time. The exuvia are, as arthropods grow, their exoskeleton does grow with them. So they shed their exoskeleton. When they do that, the piece of exoskeleton that they leave behind is what we call an exuvia. Okay. They used to not have silverfish in the library. Silverfish are scavengers. You sometimes will find them in garden environments, anywhere where there's dead and decaying organic material. Many places where there's dead and decaying organic material, you'll find silverfish. They typically are nocturnal, so you don't see them a lot during the daylight hours. When you usually see them running around, you come in at night, and then when you turn on the light, they kind of scatter for cover, kind of a thing. So that's when you'll typically see silverfish. But the library at one point did not have silverfish. What happened was right after I first started teaching here, they remodeled the library. Most of you probably can't remember this unless you grew up locally here, but the library used to not have the bottom floor on it. The second floor was actually the bottom floor. I don't know if you guys knew that. But they were remodeling and putting in that bottom floor that you walk into now today. And so they took the library into another building that's not on the campus anymore. It was called the old gym. The old gym was like an old dance hall. It used to be the old gym, the first gym here at the college. Then they made it into a kind of a dance hall. Then they used it as a substitute library while they remodeled the old library, or the new library. But in the old gym, you could go in there late at night, and if you got the keys, And you could flip on the lights, and the whole floor would just move with silverfish. There's hundreds of thousands of them. And what they were probably feeding on was they were feeding on the material that they put on hardwood floors and seal hardwood floors. Okay, it's actually made up of tree materials and so forth. And when they took the books in there, of course, that was the ideal situation for silverfish. One thing that you don't want if you're a librarian is silverfish. And because what the silverfish do is they not only will sometimes eat the pages of books, that's not where it's most critical. What they'll feed on is the glue that binds books together. So if you pick up some old books in the library, sometimes they'll fall out of their bindings and so forth. That's probably due to silverfish. I tried to get them to exterminate when they went to the new library, but they thought that was too expensive. And now they have a silverfish problem. So you can see silverfish there. If you find another place where they're very, you find them sometimes in older buildings, but where I most commonly see them is like under a dead log, or if you see a place where people have piled up newspapers and they've been there for 3 or 4 weeks, if you start moving newspapers around with a light at night, you'll start seeing silverfish. Okay. So, any questions about the silverfish? So they're the only wingless order that we're going to talk about. The most primitive of the winged orders that we're going to talk about is the order Ephemeroptera. The order Ephemeroptera are commonly what we call the mayflies. Okay. Now mayflies, well, let me back up. Before we talk about the mayfly specifically, the order Ephemeroptera, let me mention one thing about insects. All insects go through some sort of metamorphosis. What metamorphosis is it's when the organism is different as a juvenile versus an adult. Okay? Some of them are more different from as juveniles and adult, between juvenile stages and adults than others. For example, with all of you know the butterfly life cycle, right? Caterpillar, chrysalis, adult, right? Bugs and grasshoppers, they don't look all that much different when they're young versus when they're adults. What they do is during their metamorphic development, however, they do develop wings as they move along, and we'll see some pictures of that. With the order Ephemeroptera, they have a different type of metamorphosis. What happens with the Ephemeroptera is their immature stages are found in aquatic environments. They are only aquatic, so they'll only live in freshwater streams, lakes, ponds, those types of places. So when you see adult mayflies, where do you typically find them? Around the water, right? Okay. There's a couple reasons for that. First of all, let's take a look at some of the characteristics of the Ephemeroptera. Notice they do have caudal filaments here. This particular species has two caudal filaments, kind of similar to the silverfish, right? But you're not going to mistake this for a silverfish. Why? It has wings. Okay. Now the wings of the mayflies, the forewing is usually much larger than the hindwing, and the forewing is usually triangular in shape, which is kind of an unusual shape for most insect wings. If you look, the forewing there, the front, big front wing, looks like a triangle. Okay. These organisms are very poor flyers, and that's one reason why you don't see them a long ways away from water. Okay. Because really, as adults, the only thing they're going to do as an adult is find a mate, have sex, lay their eggs, and then they're going to die. Okay, that's all they're going to do as an adult. They actually, as adults, do not eat because their mouthparts don't function when they're adults. They're what we call vestigial mouthparts. So adult mayflies only live for a day or two, and then they die. And because they're such poor flyers, they never really get that far away from the water. When you see mayflies flying, they're really what I would call a fluttery flyer. They, you know, might move up and they'll kind of settle. They don't fly very good. Okay. Any questions about that? Okay. Those of you that are fly fishermen, you know what an adult mayfly and a juvenile mayfly looks like, right? It's one of the around here. It's one of the major fly fishing patterns that we use. Okay. Are mayflies. Any questions about the mayflies? It's out of all of the winged insects, the mayflies are probably the most primitive from an evolutionary perspective. Now, there's some indications as to why they're primitive, but probably the easiest one for students to understand is if you look at their wings here, notice how many cross veins they have. Not the long veins running this way, but how many veins they have in between those veins. They're called cross veins. Typically, from an evolutionary perspective, the more cross veins that are found in an insect wing, the more primitive that insect is from an evolutionary perspective. We'll look a little bit later on, maybe not today, we might not get there today, but we'll get to the bees and wasps. And with bees and wasps, you see two cross veins in the wings. Okay, so they're some of the more advanced insects. Any questions about the mayflies? Okay, the next order that we want to talk about then is the order Odonata. The order Odonata are your damselflies and dragonflies. The order Odonata has some characteristics in common with the Ephemeroptera. The main thing they have in common is their life cycle. In the order Odonata, the immature insects are found in aquatic environments, whereas the adult insects are found in terrestrial environments. Okay? And again, if you're a fly fisherman, you know what a immature and a mature damsel and dragonfly look like. Okay? Again, very important to food for fish. Okay? And the adults of the Odonata never really get that far away from water. However, they do get further away than the Ephemeroptera. Okay? So, looking at the Odonata, one of the characteristics that we see that they have is this long, narrow abdomen. Okay? And this one's bent here. These two Odonans are mating. But notice the long, slender abdomen. Now, there are some other insects with that long, slender abdomen, so that's not a distinguishing characteristic. But if you look at that long, slender abdomen, you know it's one of two orders that we're going to talk about in the Insecta. It's either going to be Odonata or Neuroptera. And the difference between Odonata and Neuroptera is in the head. The Odonata have huge eyes. If you look at the Odonata eyes, they look like they take up over half the area of the head, and they actually do in many cases. Okay. The second characteristic that's associated with the head that's a major difference between the Odonata and the Neuroptera, the two with the long extended, long narrow abdomens, are the antennae. Can you guys see the antennae there on that dragonfly? You will once I show them to you. See right here? A little black thing. Okay. But when you look at a dragonfly or a damselfly, you typically look at it and antennae isn't the first word that comes to your mind. And it's because the antennae are very, very short. In the other order that has that long, narrow abdomen, the Neuroptera, they're going to have long antennae, okay, long visible antennae. So very large eyes, very short antennae, long, slender abdomen are characteristics of the Odonata. Okay. Any questions about that? Now, in the Odonata, there are two major groups, the dragonflies and the damselflies. Okay? I'll hear, as I'm out fishing with my kids and so forth, I'll hear other kids around the pond that will holler to their parents that they caught a dragonfly. And I think to myself, boy, those parents just didn't teach their kids very much. Because they didn't catch a dragonfly unless it was either dead first or really injured. Because dragonflies are really, really strong flyers. What they probably caught was a damselfly. Okay. Dragonflies, there's two easy ways to tell whether or not you're looking at a damselfly or a dragonfly. The first is when the dragonfly is at rest, it holds its wings perpendicular to its body like this. Whereas the damselfly, when it's at rest, it holds its wings parallel to its body or back over its abdomen. Okay. The second way that you can tell the difference between a dragonfly and a damselfly is dragonflies are tremendous flyers. Okay, they're the insects that you see that, you know, move almost instantaneously from place to place, kind of like a helicopter almost. Okay, and in all my years of taking students down and collecting insects, I've only had one student that could consistently catch a dragonfly. Most students never catch one. Because the dragonflies, they can see your net coming, and they're fast enough they can move out of the way of the insect net when you're swinging it at them. Okay. Whereas the damselflies are, relatively speaking, much more easy to catch. Okay. This is a damselfly here. These two damselflies are mating. Okay. And if you look, the wings are held parallel to the body when they're at rest. Also notice, however, they do have very large eyes. Damselflies are actually pretty good flyers, but they're not as good as dragonflies. Their flight is usually more fluttery, but not as fluttery as the Ephemeroptera, the mayflies. In other words, they'll kind of flutter a little bit as they fly along. They're not, you know, they just don't zip from one place to another. Okay. This is kind of interesting. In the Odonata, the male reproductive parts are found anteriorly on the abdomen. Right up here, whereas the female reproductive parts are found posteriorly on the abdomen. What they do when they're mating is the male grabs a hold of the female with some little pinchers on the posterior portion of his abdomen, grabs a hold right behind her neck, and then she bends her abdomen up so that they can copulate. Okay? Now this is where it gets really interesting. If the male, once he's fertilized her, lets her go, she'll dump his sperm. Okay? She'll dump his sperm and go off and find another mate. The male has to take care of the female once he's mated with her. If he doesn't, she just dumps his sperm. So what he has to do is he actually has to hold her behind the head and fly around with her until she's ready to lay her eggs in the water. Okay? If he doesn't do that, she'll just dump the sperm and go find another mate. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay, the next order then that we want to talk about is the order Orthoptera. The order Orthoptera include your grasshoppers, crickets, and their allies. Okay. You'll see this ending on a lot of the insect order names and also on some other names in the mammalia. This P-T-E-R-A. P-T-E-R-A means wing, okay, in Latin. And the first part of the order name actually means something in Latin as well. Ortho means straight. So these insects, they're considered to be the straight-winged insects. Now with the Orthoptera, not all of the Orthopterans have wings. Some of them are wingless, even though they have wing buds or wing pads. But as adults, they may be wingless. A good example of a wingless Orthopteran that you might have come in contact with before is something like a Mormon cricket. Okay. But most of the grasshoppers and crickets do have this straight wing, and we'll talk about it more in a minute. But most Orthopterans, the key characteristic is actually a type of mouth part they have called a chewing mouth part. And pretty much all Orthopterans have the same shape of a head here. When they do have wings, they have two pairs of wings again. The front pair is long and straight, long and slender. And then they have membranous wings that basically are folded up right now underneath this long, straight wing. So if you were to look at the thorax of an Orthopteran that has wings, it would look something like this. The forewing is typically long and straight like that. Then what you'll see is you'll see a membranous hindwing that has all sorts of bands and veins in it back here. Okay. And this forewing is kind of leathery. Right. Again, not all Orthopterans have wings. So really, the easiest way for me to tell them from other insects is I can actually look at their head and tell whether or not it's Orthoptera. But for people who are not really trained, the easiest thing to look for are these hind jumping legs. The vast majority of Orthopterans, not all of them, but the vast majority of them, have hind legs that are really strong, and you can tell they're used for jumping. They're really the only group of insects that have these jumping legs that are fairly large. There's one other group of insects that are going to have jumping legs, which are the fleas, and there's a big difference in size of organism, right? Okay. So if they have those hind jumping legs, they're Orthopterans. The one exception, there's one group of orthopterans that don't have jumping legs and don't have wings, and that's the Jerusalem crickets. And we do have some of those around here. Okay. From a human standpoint, orthopterans have been and remain today one of the most important animals on the face of the earth. Okay. Why is that? Kind of an interesting statement I just made, right? In relationship to humans, orthopterans are probably, I would say, probably the most important group of animals on the face of the earth.
Good fishing bait?
They can be good fishing bait, but that's not why. Every one of you are impacted by these organisms. The reason why is they're plant eaters. And infestations of orthopterans can decimate food crops. It's one of the major reasons why we have famines in the world. Okay, in Africa, when they have famines, most of the time when they have famines, it's not due to drought only. It's usually due more to orthopteran infestations, locust infestations and so forth. And they will totally decimate a crop. Even in the United States, if we have orthopteran outbreaks, our food prices can go up, and of course in the United States we produce a lot of food, so typically we don't starve, but if we don't have enough food to export, other people in the world are going to starve. Okay, does that make sense? So because of that, that's why I would consider them to be the most important animals in the world, because if you have them, it can just totally waste a crop. Okay.
Isn't that how the Mormon cricket got its name?
Yeah, that's how the Mormon cricket got its name. The story is, for those of you who have not had Utah history, right after the people first settled Utah, there was a big infestation of crickets. The Mormon crickets, they're about this long, stand about that tall. They're really pretty large crickets. And they had a big infestation, and it was eating all the crops. The story is that the people of Utah prayed, and the seagulls came down and ate all the crickets, which shaved their food crop, and therefore, that's why our state bird is something as stupid as a California seagull, okay, if you ask me. It's kind of interesting, our state bird and you know, things like that. We have the California seagull as our state bird, Colorado blue spruce is our state tree, Arizona sago lily is our state flower, so kind of interesting. But that's the tale, anyways, or at least the history. If you've never seen Mormon cricket infestations, they can be just unbelievably devastating. We do get Mormon cricket infestations in Utah still today. We get more of them in kind of what I would call western Utah, the West Desert, up into Box Elder County, and sometimes out into Uinta County.
They came to Ridgefield a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that probably could happen easily because you get them a lot of times over by Coldport and stuff. But they can just be devastating. Probably the most interesting place I saw a Mormon cricket infestation was last summer. I was up on top of Barney Top. If any of you know where that's at, up on top of the boulders, at 10,000 feet elevation, there was a Mormon cricket infestation up there. But probably the worst Mormon cricket infestation I've ever seen is out by, remember the name now. If you go out past Eureka, the back way. No. You go out past Eureka towards Tooele. What's that little, there's like a little tiny town there. I can't remember the name of it now. Anyways, there's a little town there. And right outside that town, I come around this corner on the highway. And if you drive that highway, if you're going to Dugway or to like Tooele, you can drive like 100 miles an hour usually because there's not that many cops. So I was just flying down the road and go around this corner. And all of a sudden hit this slick spot in the road and slid down off the road, almost rolled my truck. So I flipped around to see what the heck the thing was, and it was a whole infestation of Mormon crickets. About, I would say, 300 or 400 yards wide. And there were so many of them on the road that it made it slick. While I was sitting there looking at them, a young lady in a car come along and rolled her car, wasn't able to control it. But you look, if you looked either way at where those Mormon crickets had been, there was no vegetation at all. That summer it was so bad, it was when I was working on my PhD. I worked out in Skull Valley out by Dugway. And the infestations of grasshoppers were so bad that they had eaten all the food out in Skull Valley. And the grasshoppers were starving to death. So what they would do is they would actually get on metal fence posts and they were scraping the paint off of the metal fence posts. And it's the first time in my life where I've ever had grasshoppers trying to eat me. As I was out in the field doing my work, they would actually get on me and bite me, and I mean, it was miserable. So there can be very, very serious orthopteran infestations. Okay. Any questions about the orthoptera? The next order is the order Isoptera. Iso means the same. The order Isoptera are your termites. And when they do have wings, both their front and hind wings look almost identical. Therefore, the name Isoptera, or same wing. Okay. Now, when we look at termites, termites are the only order of insects that are truly social. Okay. We find some other insects in some orders. For example, some of the bees are social, but most bees are not social. All organisms that belong to the Isoptera are social, and they're what we call the termites. And they have a social structure. They have three different castes. They have a royal caste, a worker caste, and a soldier caste. Okay? And you can actually see all three castes in this picture. Most of these organisms are worker castes. This is a soldier caste. This is a reproductive caste. This is the female here. She's basically an egg-laying machine. Okay? Now, the royal caste, when they're first born, they actually develop wings. These are all royal castes. And what they do is they use these wings, they emerge from the colony, and they fly away, try and find another mate, and found a new colony. And once they find a mate, start a new colony, they lose their wings and never get them back. Okay? So sometimes what people think are flying ants are really termites. Now, you all know that termites actually feed on what?
Wood.
However, they cannot digest wood. I think we talked about this with the protists. And they actually have a protist in their digestive system that helped them to digest the wood. And a lot of the insecticides that are used to help control termites in a home, what the chemicals do is they actually kill the protist in the gut. They actually don't kill the termite themselves. And then the termite starves to death because it can't digest its food. Okay. Now, if you have termites in your home, you want to get an exterminator out, and they're pretty expensive, $3,000-$4,000 to have your house exterminated with termites. You want to take care of them because they can destroy your home. However, a lot of times there are ants that look a lot like termites. And if you have ants in your home, you don't want to spend that much money on an exterminator. Just go down to Walmart or IFA or something and buy ant bait. Take care of them that way. Okay. So how do you tell the difference between ants and termites? Because they do look similar. Okay. Well, there are at least two major differences between ants and termites. If you don't learn anything else in this class, you ought to learn this so that you can know whether or not you need to spend lots of money getting rid of termites in your home. First major difference is the antennae. Termites have straight antennae like that, whereas ants, they have bent antennae, or what we call geniculate antennae, on their head. Termites, where their thorax joins with their abdomen, it's broadly joined. Okay, and you can see that here. Here's the thorax, here's the abdomen, and they're joined the whole way along there. Okay. With ants, this is the thorax of an ant, and their abdomen is what I would call a narrow-waisted abdomen. It pinches down right next to the thorax. Okay? And you can actually see this even when they're very, very small. That's usually when people have questions. Just take a good magnifying glass and look at them, and you'll be able to tell the difference. Okay? Any questions? Okay, next Monday we're going to finish up the class Insecta.
ordered within the class Insecta, and we'll actually probably get into the final Mucana Dermata. Just kind of by way of announcement, next Friday, a week from today, there will be no class. I'm going to be gone on a field trip to Southern Utah. So.